I think you were saying that...
Yes, we had the way about being out of the cash.
Yes.
Or money over the night, overnight or over the weekend. So, no, we weren't too keen to try and undercut them at that stage.
How often did you find you were dealing with London to close a position or cut a position? Was that, in other words, was it an important part of one's jobbing?
Yes, it wasn't so much cutting a position. If you wanted to cut, quite often you try and do a deal with a government broker, but it was more a question of adjusting the book. You could suddenly find that the way the business was, that you'd suddenly got very bull or very bear, which wasn't the true way, it wasn't actually showing what the business was in the market. The country brokers as a whole could suddenly all be buyers or all be sellers, whereas in London you were getting a two-way business. They could indeed be the opposite way. And it was a question of just looking at the total book, seeing what our total capital was, weighing up and saying, well, listen, we've got far too much here. We must just adjust it. What are we going to... And then you look for a stock, you think, well, what should we try and do it with? And it would pay to try and deal in a stock which the government was active in. Because then you would just deal direct with the government broker. And if not, then we would go to the market and say, listen. And they were quite happy to take the stock, or sell a stock. But it was more, as I say, sometimes the country could be sellers to a man. And yet in London, the jobs were finding buyers all over the place. So it was an odd phenomenon, really.
Did you have situations where there was wide variation between the prices up in Liverpool and those being quoted down in London?
No, not really, because we knew what the prices were. We had a rough idea of what they were. We didn't actually know the touch. But we had an idea what the market was like. Don't forget, we had our partner down here, and he would say, oh, add an eighth on the mediums and a quarter on the short, on the longs. So you'd then adjust your prices. And that's a very rough and ready way of doing it. And then you'd come down and say, right, well, one or two of them aren't quite that good, so that you only have gone up 3/16 or something.
So was London a kind of benchmark in that sense?
Yes, yeah. Well, cause London is the mother market. We were just providing a service in the country.
One of the things that it's often said about the jobbing firms in London was that capital was one of their main problems in coping with the market environment as it evolved during the late 60s, 70s. Mm. Was that something that you were conscious of as partners in Liverpool?
Yes. Capital was a bit of a problem. None of us were wealthy men. We had a capital in the business, and as partners went out, either through death or retirement, so did their money. That had to be replaced, new partners coming in. And when I was senior partner, I once or twice didn't let them take out an awful lot of money at the end of the year, thereby forcing them to keep more capital in. And in fact, we didn't have enough capital to run the business, basically. Yes, we were liquid. All the rules we weren't breaking the rules, capital adequacy rules, anything like that. But what we did was that we had to have a tremendous line of credit at the bank. And I always kept a little bit in reserve, which the bank very kindly agreed. Well, it was a commercial rate. But the... myself and my accountant, my finance partner, we could ring up and on our voice at the end of the phone have an extra line for a night if we got into a little bit of trouble. I only had to do it twice. No, three times. But it was useful to have that buffer there.
Was position taking something that you found was an increasing... thing that was happening in a sense?
We made our money on our positions. We made very little on actual turnover during the day. Yes, it was the taking of positions and that provided the majority of our income.
About how long would you be running a position for?
Ooh, sometimes not very long. you could buy a stock, and if you're damn lucky, you'd sell it and make a turn, and that'd be super. It didn't often happen, but we'd take a position and run it for. Once you've taken a position, the point your one thing we always looked at was when the stock was delivered to us. If it came in the next day, you were then beginning to pay for it, because you had to take it up and pay for it, so you're out of the money. So it depended upon what the book was like, how your cash situation was. But we've run positions even in gilts for weeks on end.
What capital did you feel it was necessary to run a book? Did it obviously vary from book to book?
Didn't look at it that way. No, we'd looked at it over the whole gilt market. Although we had our own books, we didn't say, well, you're limited to X. We just looked at the total. It wouldn't surprise me if in London it was slightly different, because they were dealing much larger amounts of money. But we just took the book as a whole.
And roughly how much do you think it was necessary, say, at a particular time to run the firm's books?
Well, I mean, it was millions, really. We borrowed it from the bank. We had capital in the business, but our capital wouldn't have provided... we couldn't have run very large positions. I mean, when I say very large, I'm not talking about the large size that we run down here. I mean, a couple of million was quite a large book position. But in fact, I would think that we rarely had positions in over a million. I mean, latterly, over the last 5-6 years, yes. But before that, we wouldn't often have a position over a million in any one stock.
Just to switch the focus slightly, what were your feelings when the stock exchange did come to the decision with the government to abolish fixed commissions, and then shortly after the stock exchange decided to do away with the single capacity system?
Well, I've been very lucky and fortunate in that I was part of that decision making body called the Council of the Stock Exchange. And so I was involved in the big debate, the 2-day debate we had in July or August. I've forgotten how many years ago now. I've been on the council since 1981, and I'm still there. So I was well prepared, as well prepared as anybody was, knowing about it.
And what were your feelings about the decision to end single capacity?
Well, I mean, it was a unanimous decision by the council. Although it was the end of an era. And I think that my personal feelings were definitely, and still are, that it was very sad. I suppose it's progress, it had to happen, but it was quite sad, really. The end of an era.
What would you say had been the strengths of the single capacity system, even within your direct experience as a dealer?
Well, you had the segregation of the businesses. There was no doubt about that. And I believe that jobbers and brokers are two different animals. You have a completely different outlook on life. It's a difference as chalk and cheese. I don't think many people make the change from one to the other very easily. Although, funny enough, a number of jobbers have now become brokers. Perhaps that's the easy way of doing it. But I think that they were two different animals. As to market making and broking now, the system so different. But I still believe, I mean, looking around, you've still got, although I don't suppose it's going to last for much longer, but we've still got a lot of old traders from the, old traders, it sounds terrible, doesn't it? Old ex-jobbers working as market makers. When they've gone, I do wonder what will happen to the market-making system. It'll carry on, but it might lose a little bit. I don't know.
Well, let me ask you one concluding question. What would you say it took to be a jobber? What were the qualities in a successful jobber?
I read an article once that a jobber is a fellow who went down onto the market with a bit of paper, a sharp pencil, and his nose, and lived on his wits. And I think that there's a lot to that. You've got to be, I believe one's got to be mentally agile, the one thing you really haven't got to do is to worry. And if you worry, you're not going to get sleep at night, and then you're going to be no good to anybody. So you certainly have, you mustn't, in my book, worry. And I particularly could never work with anybody who hadn't got a sense of humour. And it was fun. But I say that era's gone. Never to return.
Would you have ever contemplated taking up a different career at any stage during your jobbing career?
During the jobbing career, no. I was forced to give up trading, running a book, when I became senior partner, which was too long ago now, as I care to mention. I don't like to recall it. Well, it was a long time ago. I couldn't be senior partner. Well, where we were in the country, it was very difficult to be senior partner and be an active jobber. And then I've often had a hankering to go back to it, and I could quite easily go downstairs now, pick up the phone and start dealing. But I don't. But I have changed my career because I've given up that, and I'm no longer the senior partner because we're now in a bigger firm here. And I'm now, a lot of people say poacher turned gamekeeper, in that I'm now the group compliance officer here. If you ask me which I'd rather do, I'd rather go back a few years and be running a book.
Good. I think we'll finish on that note. Thank you very much.
Thank you.